WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road this week. We're back out. I'm having hot dogs and crab cakes for the playoffs. Feels like a Festivus for the rest of us around here. All brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play. I have some Raven scratch-offs to giveaways, and as well as some holiday cash drops, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, and you get 60 months of free financing. I maybe the Ravens could get that deal on Lamar Jackson. They would be really happy about that. This is one of my favorite dudes that I miss you since they took my press credentials. I don't really all of these people that I have I've met through having a media credential and being in the media for all these years. He's one of the guys that's embedded with the Bengals, has been for a very, very long time. And much like a Jeff Srebecker or Jameson Hensley here from the newspaper side, now doing things out athletically. And you can follow him as well and podcasting and doing all that cool stuff. But, dude, I did not have you on last week because I knew the game was meaningless, right? I'm like, I'm going to leave Dana alone. And it was, and I thought we were going to play the Bills or the Jaguars. I didn't think it was going to be Cincinnati. But I'm like, yeah, leave him alone. It's a stupid game. We don't want to talk about it. And I didn't have you on way back in the day when we played in the middle of the season because our schedules got messed up. But it is great to begin 2023 with you. It is it's a fascinating week to be discovering the Bengals and seeing them the other day and the weirdness of this home and home sort of hockey sort of matchup that they have going on. But dude, you're covering a team that has real Super Bowl hopes. Woo! We're in the middle of a weird, weird thing going on here in the Purple Kingdom, Paul Daner.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of odd. I mean, the Bengals are as stable and set as you can be entering the playoffs. You know, I mean, they're in a great place. They have a team that is really, really well rounded. You know, I mean, there's very few teams in the league that can truly beat you in every way. I mean, they win games with their defense. They win games getting turnovers. They win games running the score up with an elite quarterback tearing it up. You know, they've won games that have been physical, pound grounded out type stuff. They've proven they can do it whatever way is necessary. They've won games by making some dramatic play at the end. You know, it just seems like they've always found a way to make a play, and now they've won eight in a row. And they're 12-4 and entering the playoffs feeling really good about themselves. I don't know how much that means going forward, but they certainly have all the pieces to put together another run to the Super Bowl. You know, whether that happens or not, who knows, but they're in a great place.
Paul, for you with what happened last week, and obviously you witnessed it, you were there, you're one of the trusted resources on Twitter that I was looking to say, hey, what's up? And they had to go play us in sort of this game where it felt like there was a lot of piss and vinegar in the game that we've now seen. Roquan Smith got a lot of money, had some cheap shots in the game. Eli Apple had some cheap shots. There's, you know, a couple days later, it feels like there's this – Steelers Ravens bad blood that could be boiling on this. It feels like a lopsided game on Sunday night, even with Lamar. If he puts a purple cape on and comes running out, it feels a little lopsided and weird. But more than that, what the franchise, what Cincinnati, what all of it, and then the whole spiritual part of now they got to go to Buffalo. Now they got to go to Kansas City. They can't host a game. This whole play we're going to play in Nashville is all built upon the Bills and Kansas City. And then the coin flip and the whole coin flip in the end zone. Boy, the Bengals are, you know, not the Bungles anymore. And they got a little chip on their shoulder right now about a lot of things, right?
They do. It has been a extremely weird month. I mean, it really for a while around here where, you know, the Bengals, ever since they beat Kansas City on December 4th, as part of this win streak, they won 27-24 and really established themselves, you know, as one of those. And them, the Bills and the Chiefs kind of together on a different level than everybody else in the AFC. Ever since then, every game has been very weird. And you've had, you know, games where they went to New England and they had the greatest first half you've ever seen against the number one DVOA defense and went up 22-0. And they ended up needing to force a fumble on a go-to-go situation at the end of the game after multiple essentially Hail Marys that the Patriots hit in a miraculous comeback. And you had a game where Tom Brady had more turnovers in like an 8-minute period than he'd had pretty much all season, where they ripped off 34 unanswered against the GOAT. And after, despite having kind of a really bad first half, you had obviously everything that happened on Monday Night Football with the Bills. And then you had this game this past Sunday where it's like, are they trying to win? Are they not trying to win? There's their real defense. Okay, this is pretty tough sledding. What are you using plays? Are you holding back? Every single game has felt really weird ever since that Chiefs game. And for that fact, I think this team is kind of ready to kind of hope to get back to a normal week, a 7-day work week, and a game that's on Sunday against a team that they know, and try to prove that the weirdness has been a reason for sort of some of the, there's been some cracks maybe in the way that they've been playing, but it has. All that stuff along the way has done what you've said, which has developed this chip on their shoulder at the league, at people saying that they can't handle this tough schedule that was in front of them. And that was the thing midway through the season. You know, they were coming out of the bye and everyone said, man, they have the toughest schedule left in football. They can't possibly chase down the Ravens, who have the easiest schedule left in football. This schedule is so tough. And that is when, after a game, assistant coach Mark Duffner yelled, they got to play us. And that's become their thing. Is people got to realize that it's got to go through the Bengals at this point. They have really kind of, that has kind of encapsulated, you know, the sort of disrespected attitude that they feel like they have despite everything they accomplished last year.
Coach Duffner? Coach Duffner?
Mark Duffner. That's legend. Legend.
Mark Duffner has sat inside my radio station with his feet up on the desk as the head coach of the Maryland Terps back in the day. So
he's been around.
Duffner has done some really, really kind things when he was down in Miami and over the course of time. Paul Daner is here, The Athletic, and you read him, listen to him. No one covers the Bengals better than he does. But I'll go through Burrow, and we'll get on to why they're playing well and how they're playing well and cap and all that stuff. But put your purple hat on, and you're watching from the other side of the Ravens. You're watching these press conferences. You're seeing Harbaugh. You're waiting on Lamar. You're seeing national broadcasts where Rich Eisen says he's coming back before Christmas, and then he's not. You know, you're a real sophisticated guy. You know what it means to not have an agent, to not have an agent calling the Paul Daners and the Jamison Hensley saying, whoa, we're getting a second opinion. He's 3 to 5 weeks. He might not be coming back. Or an agent that would have said, dude, take the $120 million they're offering you back in April, your bigger, better deal. We'll get some insurance on you for the rest, you know, like all of that. And this is a mess, right? Second year, kid can't play, might play, might not be able to play. Leaks coming out. He's lazy. He's in the tub. His knee's bad. He doesn't want to play. He's not under contract. Like, I've never covered anything as sloppy as this from the Ravens' perspective. And if I got my purple radar up and they were still treating me like a real media member and I sort of kind of knew what was going on, it would be to their benefit. But I bet they're just thinking, we're going to deal him off to Miami or Nashville or someplace we can get a lot of money. He can get his tax benefit that he's looking for. And because I don't think they want to give him $250. I think somebody else will give him more money than they're willing to give him. That's my professional opinion on this, especially 10 minutes after they just gave Roquan Smith $100 million.
Nestor, how could you possibly give somebody who can't complete a season 2 years in a row that kind of money? I know Lamar is great. Like, Lamar at peak is unlike any human in this league. But availability, man, like, he plays a different brand of game, and you have to have availability to go 2 years in a row now where you've had to go through this with having him on the sideline and Snoop Huntley and the Anthony Browns of the world are having your playoff chances in their hands. You can't take that. You can't live that way in this league. Like, you just have to find somebody who you feel like you can rely on. If you're going to give that kind of money, if you're going to base your entire franchise around him, to me, I don't know how you pay him, you know, just because of that aspect. And that's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow, because obviously when you feel like you have the guy, and he is the guy when he's there, when you feel like you have that, to give that up is so hard. But at a certain point, if you feel like you can create a better option for yourself, it seems like it's something that you, You know, I don't know how you write that check. That's all. I don't know how you do, especially teams would be willing to. If teams are willing to, if Miami's willing to, whatever, and you can load up and reset, it feels like that's probably where this thing ends. You would know probably better than me, but all I know is from the outside in, it seems really hard for a lot of really smart people there in Baltimore to write that check.
Well, it hasn't happened, right? And let's add this up. Let's be dirty reporters because we're all rat poison. You know that, right? Like, skipped OTAs, got mouthy during OTAs, you know, kind of is on his own clock in that way. Holding the sign up that says, pay me, after winning a national title. Like, listen, this is not normal for the franchise. It's not normal for the franchise to have sort of dysfunction around all this. But that being said, the night they dealt back into the first round, the night they turned the whole thing over, the night they jettisoned Flacco, the night that they started saying that the Willie Sneeds were going to be their wide receivers and that they were never going to be able to recruit a wide receiver with this offense. It's just not the kind of wide receiver that wants the ball the way wide receivers want the ball, and not even being able to pay them and pay him. But everybody in the room thought, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. You all knew running into linebackers 200 times a year would by December probably be risky every other year at best, right? Like, yeah, you'd say if we're going to have him 6-7 years, 2 or 3 of those years, bad things are going to happen to a guy that does that. And it doesn't take much to take away mobility and speed from a speed guy to just blow his game up, right? But I would say this. The money part of this is, well, the National Football League and the Players Association, just franchise him. Just franchise him. It's 50 million. He'll play. I don't think this kid's going to play. I don't think you can just franchise him because that's the remedy for this, right? This is what they thought. Well, we'll just give him 50 million. He'll play. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that will play out either. I mean, I don't know. It's been so confusing because it's been so shrouded in mystery, at least from my angle, from afar here. It's all felt very smoke and mirrors. You don't know what's going on. Everything's very hidden and hard to understand. You know, when you hear about somebody passing on the kind of money that was allegedly offered, that's when you're like, none of this adds up. Like, all of this is confusing what the agendas really are. I mean, you can franchise and I assume they're going to, but you know, what happens next is probably the real question. Is it a tag and trade? Because that's probably, you know, where you would think that would go if there ends up being real threats to just not play on it.
Or who will pay the most? And I think we learned last offseason, Lamar learned, the industry learned, Matt Ryan learned, you know, that when teams compete, you win, right? Like, yeah. Ravens will win and Lamar will win in the end if they get 3 number ones and he gets the $240 million guaranteed and a tax break that he's looking for. But boy, that's a tough situation. It's a way different situation than where you are. Paul Danner's here from the Athletic, which it brings me to this crossroads, right? You and I have been knowing each other 2 decades. I mean, Marvin, right? Like, all the Marvins, this and Carson Palmer and Ray Lewis and all Joe Flacco feels so 7, 8, 9 years ago. And all of this has been, well, the Ravens are well-owned and the Brown families, you know, now all of a sudden it feels like things have changed a little bit here for the Steelers as well, to some degree, right? And the Browns are the Browns. But for the Bengals and the Ravens this week to meet at this weird crossroads, as the Bengals feel like they're going to be really tough to beat for a couple of years here, right? I mean, you feel that way covering them and talking about them on a day. They are really – I saw the prices for tickets in the Buffalo. Like, it's a thing now to go to a game in Cincinnati, right?
There's the understatement of the day. I mean, it's more than a thing. I mean, they've taken over the city. I mean, this is a team that, you know, we are well-documented. I wrote a lot about it, you know, in the end of the Marvin era and the beginning of the Zach Taylor era, was the number one job of the entire organization in the time before Joe Burrow and the beginning, you know, days of Joe Burrow, was to reconnect with a fan base that had kind of grown apathetic to them. You know, this city did not respond to the Bengals anymore. They were a public nuisance, right? They were part of the problem. There was no sense of fun or enjoyment that this team, or civic pride that this team brought to the city. It brought frustration. It brought ire. It brought jokes. I wrote in the 2020 season, I went down and hung out in one of the tailgates and talked to some of the, like, you know, the diehards. And they talked about how hard it is to be a Bengals fan in Cincinnati. And it's like, sorry, I'm a Bengals fan. It was apologetic, hands up, right? What has transpired over the last 2 years, and really since the day they drafted Joe Burrow, essentially, is without question the greatest brand renaissance I've ever seen. And
I wouldn't recognize it because I haven't been to Cincinnati in a year or two, right?
You know what? You wouldn't recognize anything. It looks different on TV
because there's no empty seats. It looks different.
They have a waiting list for season tickets. They do all the things now that fans complain they didn't do, whether it's game day experience, whether it's practice bubbles, whether it's selling naming rights to the stadium and the practice and all that money making.
Killed
stuff.
Several bottles of wine with Marvin on the bubble and itself.
spending in free agency, drafting in a certain way, like all of those things that they have changed completely. They have done a 180, and created this brand that everyone loves in this entire city.
White thing's crazy. I mean, everybody looks like Big E.
Uniform changes. I mean, things like that are exciting that fans get behind, really piling money and resources into social media and brand management and like stuff that they just left like one person in a side room to do for forever, right? Because they had no value. They viewed no value in it. Now, Elizabeth Blackburn, for those that don't know, so the structure of the Bengals front office is obviously Mike Brown, but his daughter Katie Blackburn and Troy Blackburn essentially have been running the day to day and making the vast majority of decisions along with Duke Tobin, who's player personnel. But Katie and Troy's daughter Elizabeth Blackburn is in her late 20s, early, maybe just turned 30, and smart as a whip, super energetic, star, just a star. Okay. She has kind of been working in the business world. She came back right around the time they drafted Burrow, and they put her essentially in charge of the brand and said, we have to fix this. We need someone who's young and energetic and knows how to connect. And she has become, we had her on our athletic 40 under 40 list. She has been unbelievable and become a real name in league circles too, for everything that she's done here, and become somebody who's influential and in the middle of a lot of stuff. She's been an absolute star. And that has really been a big part too on the front office side of them changing their image, connecting with the fans, doing things that people love, added a ring of honor, which they didn't have, unbelievably. And so all of that stuff adds up with the obvious, chip you have to have of winning and doing what they did and creating all these incredible moments at Paycor Stadium and throughout the city. That has just, it's turned into a totally different place. The Bengals are the coolest thing this city has going for it. And everywhere you go, you see Bengals flags, Bengals sweatshirts, Bengals. It was never that way.
It's like tent city. We had that here. We had purple flamingos on the lawn. That's what I'm saying about the difference, dude. You've been here now where they're having trouble selling tickets. They've chased me out of the building They chased me out of my seats that I paid for 26 years that nobody's sitting in here, right? So we have a different thing going on. All of that dream world you just gave me about Cincinnati, we experienced that here, that first renaissance after the first Super Bowl and then the longing during the Joe Flacco and the end of the Ray Lewis thing. It's the last 10 years where, they've won two playoff games since that Super Bowl. It'll be 10 years this month. This is the week of the Mile High Miracle 10-year anniversary, right? So all of that's going on. And what you're seeing here is what the Ravens have left when the wide receivers don't work out, when the quarterback's cranky, when the left tackle's been injured for a year and a half, when they can't get the running game together because they don't have healthy bodies. You guys now have a little bit of a thing going on with Kappa, right? I mean, the injuries are in a little bit, and Chase was out for a while, now back. Not full power, but in as good a health as maybe the Bengals have been all year right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Kappa and Collins injuries are significant just because, you know, we know what the line issue was last year. I think they're still more solid there than they were last year. I mean, Ted Karras has been a massive upgrade at center. Cordell Volson has been a really pleasant surprise rookie at left guard. Jonah Williams is still there. So you still have a lot more strength. And, you know, Adeniji has been solid enough at tackle, and, you know, Max Sharping is a guy who's played, you know, plenty of football in this league. So I don't think the drop-off is as significant. They're certainly better than they were last year in the playoffs on the offensive line. There's no question about that. But everybody else, you know, everybody else is there. I mean, they're really not – they lost their number one corner but in midseason, but they've kind of, you know, weathered that storm. Look, when you got Burrow, Chase, Higgins, Boyd, Mixon, Hurst, all healthy, all playing, and most of your line in front of them, like, that team is really healthy. That team is one that is ready to go win a title. You know, that's possible, especially with a defense that has been playing really well of late and starting to hit that turnover streak that was a big part of their run last year. Again, yeah, health-wise, yeah, they've got dings. Everybody has a million dings, right? I mean, they're in as good a shape as anybody health-wise.
Paul Danner's here from The Athletic. We're not going to be predictive as much on the will Lamar play or won't Lamar play. The one thing I know is Joe Burrow is going to play, and availability is the best ability this time of year. I've asked you before, but just give me a little update for our audience. Maybe he hasn't heard us in the past, and maybe you even take it a bit further now that he's been to a Super Bowl, now that he's been through another season, now that this is go time. And guys like him and Trevor Lawrence, and I watch them, and I watch what the Stetson guy did the other night, and playing on that stage and then having that kind of stage this week. The pedigree is there for all of this with Joe Burrow, as you pointed out the day they drafted him. They knew that. What makes him special to you at this point? Because I'll say the one thing that it's taken a little while here in Baltimore, but the Ravens fans hate him now. Last weekend and after Sunday, and probably this is going to mean you're playing football next week and we're not, right? But they're probably going to hate him more. He's really the bravado and all of that has taken on a thing where he's a bad guy. He's a villain. He's a heel in your town when he comes in and takes your lunch money and then points at you and gets a cigar because that's who he is. So he's always been. I sort of like his act. I don't really dislike him yet, but it's taken a little while, but this is where he gets disliked here.
Sure. I mean, you know, because I think there's also an acknowledgement that, like, this guy is going to be really, really hard to beat for his entire career.
He's right? In the way. He's in the way.
Yeah. I mean, there's just – and he's not going anywhere. And you know, he does – what's – to answer your question, I mean, what has made him special here is kind of how perfect he's been for this particular situation. He loves that the Cincinnati is anonymous, you know, in the NFL landscape. He loves just going to work and being with his guys, and he loves building a culture. He loves feeling like he has he's as good at understanding locker room dynamics and being a leader as anybody in the NFL. I mean, he takes real pride in that and studying that, understanding that, has a knack for it. He loves, you know, going out there and being the underdog story. He loves the fact that, like, yeah, I made Cincinnati a winner, right? Like, I can make anyone win. You can, when you win here, you can win anywhere, right? I mean, he loves that. And he loves it. And he's, you know, he's an Ohio guy. He loves the community. That resonates here. And it has turned into a perfect fit.
So what you're saying, hold on, Paul Danner, what you're saying is you cannot envision covering the Cincinnati Bengals 2 years, 3 years from now, where he's playing a playoff game half hurt without a contract, is what you're saying. You're saying that won't happen in Cincinnati.
No, I think that I will say I don't know that I've done this or thought about this specifically yet. I think
we've thought about for 2 years here.
Well, no, I've thought about that. What I'm about to say is something that I haven't specifically put a date on yet. I think he will be the highest paid player in NFL history before free agency starts this year. I mean, he's eligible for a contract today. I mean, they could do extensions starting this week with
will
him.
He get $232 million guaranteed?
I don't know about guarantee. He will not get the fully guaranteed contract. The Bengals don't operate that. But look, the reason that it is now Paycor Stadium, the reason that they practice the Kettering Health practice fields, the reason that they practice in the IEL bubble, and the reason they have the Alta Fiber gate, and the reason they have the Allegiant gate is because they need all that cash to go into escrow so they can give him the Joe Burrow guarantee. It's Pay Joe Stadium, not Paycor Stadium, is what it is around here, because they knew that the one exception that they are going to make to the guarantee all the money rule is for that guy. And that's understandable. Everybody understands that he's an exception to every rule around here, and that's okay. He's going to get Josh Allen's contract plus, right? It's going to be Kyler Murray's contract plus. It's going to be $55 million a year. It's going to be $300 million total. It's going to be $175 million guaranteed. It's going to be all of that. He's going to see every penny of it because he's not going anywhere and he knows it. He has very little risk of not guaranteeing because people would absolutely lose their mind and burn the building to the ground if they ever let Joe Burrow leave this place. I mean, so they're going to give
him,
they're going to give him all
you,
of it.
You like him.
He's good. He's good for the city. He's good. He's good for business for us, obviously. I mean, they're relevant with him and he's just a unique person. Like he is a really unique human. I mean, as a person in general, he's wired differently than anyone else.
Flacco was like that, dude. He
they're
really was, you know,
to be, and I think you have to be, I mean, to be the Montanas, the Bradys, the Burrows, you know, to not have all the physical assets like Captain America, Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and Mahomes, right? You have to be wired differently to overcome that and play at the same level as them. He's just wired differently. And from a reporter's perspective, that's fascinating. Someone who has developed this ability to do this and is just connected differently than everybody else is a fascinating person to cover, to watch it, how he approaches every new situation is unique. It's well thought out. He's genuine. He's unfiltered. He's not afraid to say how he really feels about anything. He takes that stuff to heart. It's really interesting to watch how he approaches every level of being an NFL quarterback, whether it's off the field, whether it's on the field, whether it's situational stuff, whether it's things like the Monday Night Football game. I mean, Joe Burrow standing up and saying, look, all us captains, we're walking down to the Bills locker room and we're going to tell those guys that we're not going out there to play to make, because they need to know that from us, and giving them hugs, understand they need us right now. And to go down there and say, we need to go do this with the Bills because they need to know that this thing, this idea that they would be letting us down by saying they don't want to play in this situation is unfair to them. They need to know. And to understand that in that moment and put that group together and go down there and do that. And the Bills have talked about how much that meant. Like every situation brings out this unique person.
That's not coached either. That's not, he's not.
No, absolutely.
That's the
way. Nothing was coached. Nothing could have possibly have been coached on what happened on Monday Night Football. It's impossible. That was too unique of a situation. And for him to just have that, again, it's just all these unique circumstances. He just has this innate ability to kind of understand exactly what this situation needs. That was a prime example of it. And to be able to cover that, where you always can be surprised at how someone will approach any situation, and the latest will be whatever, however he handles his contract extension that the team is dying to give to him, is going to be fascinating as well. And that's something I find interesting. It's why we're in this business.
So I've been in this business all these years. I've been in your press box a million times. So this week they take my press pass. I can't come, but this was my image of me doing it this week. Cause I had a 5:40 AM I haven't canceled my flight yet. I've a 5:40 AM flight Monday. Cause this is what you do on 4 days notice. You just like, I'm in, I'm out. I'm thinking the game's going to end at like midnight. I can hang out. They'll probably have some chili laying around at 1:32 in the morning. And I thought, what am I going to do in that period of time after the Ravens lose 44-14? If Lamar doesn't play, 31 to maybe 21 if he does play, you know, like, so I'm thinking all I could picture myself is black and white, 2:30 in the morning in an all night chili. Are any of those Gold Stars, any of those 24 hours, I need to know. Any of, because they look like diners. They look like at 3 a.m., like a Denny's or like an IHOP, like you could go in. Is there a place that I could have helped my purple sorrow over a bowl of like chili with some noodles at 3? Does that not exist?
You could probably, there's a couple. There's a couple. They're
those
not
all
the,
light ones? Really? Good. Okay.
Not, now your main chains will not. I mean, Gold Star, Skyline will not. But
No.
You, if you go into the real heart, you go into the real heart of Cincinnati, you can find the all nighters, Camp Washington chili. I'm not, I think Price Hill chili might be, but there's a few of them where the special ones, they know they'd be there for, but I mean, they'll be pretty, they'll open pretty late. I mean, they'll stay open pretty late. I don't know. Specifically, 3 a.m. could be a time.
I just thought I'd be like waiting for the airport to open between like
House.
2 and 4.
You've always got
no,
a Waffle
no,
House.
No, 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 no. That wanted to do with Cincinnati.
Okay.
But thank you for that.
Yeah.
And that would suffice under normal circumstances. Anywhere in the South, I would do that, right? Kentucky, I would do. Well, the airport's in Kentucky. But I just thought, I just pictured myself putting a social media post up at 2:28 in the morning, season over, Lamaro, you know, like the, because that's going to happen for 6 different teams this weekend. Everybody gets their feelings hurt. And I've been on that flight before, but I just thought it deserves an all night chili in Cincinnati. And I just, you know, but waffles are fine too. They're delicious. Dude, appreciate you as always. You're a wealth of information. You've been a good friend to the program, to everything we've done here all these years. And it is, it's a little weird, Bengals Ravens playoffs, right? That's a little unique, right?
You mentioned it earlier. I get big Steelers Ravens vibes off this game. Big Steelers Ravens play where you watch it and you're like, it just hurts to watch, you know, because it's so physical. It's such a bloodbath. I remember those games, you know, whether they were in primetime or they were the playoff game, where it's just like, God, these two teams are just, it's just brutal. AFC North playoffs. It's just, it's a whole different thing. And I think that's a lot of what we're going to see on Sunday.
Well, bad vibes here all the years with the Steelers, and we beat them in the knockout, but they knocked us out of championship games, all of that. You guys had the whole blow up during the Marvin era where you won the game, but you didn't. Like, we both have hated the Steelers forever. It's time to not like each other. So, Cincinnati, it goes back to Earl Weaver saying Cincinnati, back in 1970. So, Paul will be there. Please follow him. Paul Daner, JR, out on the Athletic and out on the Twitter thing and his podcast and all that good stuff. For all things Bengals, know thy enemy, we would say. Paul, appreciate you, brother. Thanks for coming on, all right?
No problem. Thanks, Nestor. Have
all
a
right,
good
man.
One.
Give me some salted caramel ice cream down. Yeah, I love the ice cream there, too. I am Nestor. We are WNST. He wants the crab cakes. This is what happens when they play the games in Cincinnati. They don't get any crab cakes. Maryland Crab Cake Tour is going to be a G&A Coney Island hot dog, mixing one of the great Cincinnati traditions of hot dogs and crab cakes this week. We'll be out in White Marsh with our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.